I said, come round at 7, we'll go to the studio. What the... Reese.
Are you the Keymaster?
Yes, yes, yes. I'm the Keymaster.
Ah, good. Come in.
So, are you ready? You haven't even got your shoes on.
Come, take me, sub-creature.
Okay, I need to speak to Reese. Reese. Is Reese in there?
Only Strider.
Oh,
Princess of the Destructor!
Princess Strider, I order you to cease any and all supernatural activity and return forthwith to your place of origin or to the nearest convenient parallel dimension.
Oh, God, whoa! I feel like I've just had a demigod in me.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Hi, my name's Paul.
And my name is Zool.
And you're listening to
No Garbage.
So, Paul, what have you made me this week?
We've got a Halloween cocktail for grown-ups this week.
Oh, a Halloween cocktail for grown-ups?
Yeah, the Mr. Stay Puffed Manhattan.
Oh, Mr. Stay Puffed Manhattan.
That's the one.
Mr. Stay Puffed
Mr. Stay Puffed Manhattan.
Mr. Stay Puffed Manhattan. Is this one of your creations?
It is, yeah.
Oh, my God, I love it.
Really, there's only this time of year I can bring it out, so I've brought it out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, is it because we are nearing the time where the spirit realm and the mortal realm meet momentarily?
Exactly.
I love that, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. So most Halloween cocktails, you look up Halloween cocktails, they tend to be very sweet and candy-based.
Mm.
So I really wanted to make something that was kind of like that, but a bit more grown up. My starting point was marshmallows, toasted marshmallows. So it's built, this is a cocktail that's built around the garnish.
Oh, right.
Rather than the other way around, which most cocktails are, this is a cocktail deliberately built around toasted marshmallows as a garnish. And so when you have them both together, it's a perfect symphony of flavors.
Oh, interesting.
That's the idea.
So it's based on a Manhattan then?
Yeah.
So cool. That's such a good idea.
So you've got bourbon, you've got a Averna Amaro, you've got maraschino liqueur and vanilla liqueur. So it's a sweet Manhattan, and there's no vermouth in it.
Mmm, yeah. Boozy. Oh, boozy.
It is
boozy. Listeners, this cocktail is deliciously boozy. Mmm, that is lovely. So the marshmallow garnish went straight under my nose, and then I smelt the lovely caramelized sugar.
Mm.
And it mixes so well with it. I mean, and it's a lovely crisp. It's a lovely crisp cocktail. It's very, very lovely. Oh,
good.
I like that one a lot.
It's sweet, but I don't think it's too sweet.
No, it's not. There's a definite bitterness to it that comes through, but it's not overpowering.
No. Have a bite of the marshmallow and then a sip as well.
Mm. Oh, my God, marshmallows are so good. Oh, toasted marshmallow. Mmm, and booze. I feel like a naughty Cub Scout. Oh, it's the taste of autumn. It's the taste of bonfire and fun. I love this time of year. Fuck you, summer. You're too hot, but this time of year is perfect. Yeah, so, you know, I'm imagining, you know, big, big building with Art Deco at its finest, at its pinnacle. And as you enter this building, this is what I'm thinking when I'm drinking it. As you enter in that building, you see this lovely, it's wintry as well.
Okay.
It's very icy cold. That cuts through you, and it's getting dark, you see. And then as you go in to this building, lovely warm amber light coming through, beckoning you in. And just before you enter in, a huge lion brass head looking above you, looking kind of foreboding, and it's just amazing. And as you enter in, you feel the opulence, you feel it, and you feel warm again. There's a lovely warm, and you feel comforted as well. Strangely, even though it's this big oppressive building and it's got stature, it's got a lovely, you know, your home in your big mansion, an Empire State Apartment.
Right.
I think there's a lovely kind of decadence to this cocktail.
Yeah.
But yeah, brassiness is how I would describe it.
Okay.
Would you not?
I'm not sure how I feel about brassiness. That's not a word I would attach to flavour.
Would you not?
No.
I think a brassy flavour would be kind of like brass has that kind of warmth to it. You know, like a lovely brass or a lovely copper hot pan.
Mm.
Like, it has a sort of an old sort of flavour to it. A bit like the cooking pots that, you know, I would boil sugar down in for the fudge kitchen. They were in these big copper pans.
Right, okay. I get where you're coming from.
Because I think it's the burnt sugar flavour, not only in the caramelised marshmallow, but also in the cocktail itself. There's a lovely sort of brown sugar flavour to it.
Yeah. It's not making you think of Ghostbusters, though.
It is making me think of Ghostbusters. And do you know why I said lions?
Because they're on the building.
Yes, they are, aren't they?
I did wonder.
Oh, my God.
Ah, so it's gone into your subconscious.
Yeah, and at the beginning of Ghostbusters, when they go into the library, they have a close-up of the statues, the lion statues.
They do, yeah, they do.
Oh, I'm thinking of New York.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, obviously, Manhattan. But then that is the hometown of, who are you going to call?
I have brought no Ghostbusters facts.
What?
Because I don't think there's anything that I could tell you about Ghostbusters that you don't know.
Yeah, but our listeners might need to know.
Well, that's why I'm relying on you to bring the Ghostbusters
facts. Oh, the Ghostbusters facts. I mean, there's so many Ghostbusters facts.
I learned one today.
What was that?
That originally, before it was Ghostbusters, the whole idea was a Dan Aykroyd idea. His original idea had been him and John Belushi touring around the universe fighting supernatural forces.
Yeah.
Like the Blues Brothers in outer space.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
So the original idea, if I remember it right, that he pitched was that it was going to be Ghostbusters on Mars.
Right.
And basically ghosts was like a real problem, that they were like vermin and that you had to kind of like exterminate them because they were just everywhere.
Okay. On Mars.
On Mars. I think it was on Mars or on Pluto.
Right.
And
he's quite mad, isn't he, Dan Aykroyd?
He is quite mad, yeah. I think he's eccentric. I think he's incredibly eccentric.
Yes.
And I think, like, you know, he rose to fame, you know, with John Belushi. He met them, didn't he, on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
And then they kind of came up with the whole idea of the Blues Brothers, which started off as a Saturday Night sketch, didn't it? But then Ghostbusters, yeah, what a mad idea. And when he pitched the idea, they basically were like, that's too expensive. Mm. That's going to cost too much money. Which is ridiculous when you think about the amount of money that the actual Ghostbusters ended up costing. It was absolutely nuts,
you know.
And one of the crazy things about Ghostbusters is that it wasn't called Ghostbusters. It was called Ghostbreakers.
Oh.
Because the rights of Ghostbusters, there was already another show called Ghostbusters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And all the way through the film, every time Ghostbusters was mentioned, they had to do a retake and say Ghostbreakers. Until it got to the point where there was the scene towards the end of the film when they're all outside the building and all the special effects of the cars, you know, going down into the ground and all those people out there shouting Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters. And the director was like kind of on the phone and was just like, listen to this. Everyone's going, Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters. He's like, we don't have the money. We can't refilm all of this with them saying Ghostbreakers.
Right. So all the bits where someone says Ghostbusters,
yeah,
they've done two takes.
Yeah. And even when there's like all the logo designs of Ghostbusters when that appears and stuff, they had another version which said Ghostbreakers.
Wow.
Just in case they couldn't acquire the rights.
And it's nowhere near as good a title, Ghostbreakers, either.
No, I don't think it would have been a success, because Ghostbreakers just doesn't really make any sense, does it?
No.
Does it?
Like, no. Wow. See, I knew you'd have tons of Ghostbusters facts. That's just your first one.
That's my first one, yeah. I'm trying
Give me some of your other favourite ones.
Some of my favourite is that Bill Murray is pretty much stoned throughout the whole movie. And you can kind of tell, in retrospect, thinking about it, he looks fucking stoned.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's all sorts of crazy things about Ghostbusters. Like, so Dan Aykroyd found the inspiration for the movie based on his family history because he actually grew up surrounded by spiritualists. His great-grandfather was a noted 19th century psychic investigator who conducted seances at the family farmhouse.
What's your favourite bit in Ghostbusters?
My favourite bit is actually in the second one, when they're right at the beginning and they're doing like kids' parties. You know, they were these big famous Ghostbusters, but they got rid of all the ghosts and they're kind of redundant.
Okay, and they're doing children's parties.
Oh, wow. And they're putting the music on and they go, who are you going to call? And all the kids go, He-Man! He-Man! He-Man!
Right.
And then I can't remember who, I think it's Dan Aykroyd or something, refers to them as all these yuppie lava.
Yuppie lava.
And I just love that. What was your favourite bit in Ghostbusters?
I do love that beginning bit. The ghost in the library.
Oh, yeah.
Because when she turns and everyone screams and then the music kicks in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love them. I love the Ghostbusters theme.
Yeah.
And so that's my favourite moment. When the music kicks in for the first time, you hear the Ghostbusters theme tune.
It's amazing that. For some reason, in my mind, the second one kind of has burnt more of a hole in my mind. I think it's because I was older when the second one came out.
Right.
So I saw it at the cinema. And it fucking terrified me. It gave me nightmares for ages. Really? There's the bit where... do you not remember the second one at all?
I really don't, no.
So the second one is about an evil painting that Sigourney Weaver's working on. She's restoring it.
Okay, I remember that.
And it's
bit.
Vigo.
Yes.
Vigo the Destructor or something. Yeah. Vigo the Destroyer.
Right.
The actor who plays him is so good. And there's this bit where he goes like, you are like the buzzings of flies to Lord Vigo. And that's one of my other favourite bits. Just him doing that. Me and my brother used to love that. So every now and again, we would say to each other, just like off the cuff, just like, you are the buzzings of flies to Lord Vigo. Do you know what I mean? Like at the table. Like, this is one of those little in jokes.
Oh, lovely.
And my brother, you know, took the piss out of me for ages. I remember it was a few years ago, he said to me and you found Ghostbusters scary. And it's because I was really young. I was six. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you know, I was one of the first people in this country to see Ghostbusters.
No way.
This is an embarrassing fact about my childhood. At the time Ghostbusters was about to come out, I was the British champion at the Activision game Barnstorming.
Oh, Barnstorming? No way. Seriously?
I was the best kid in the country at it.
How old were you?
12.
My God, how did you become the best kid at Barnstorming?
I played a lot of it.
How did they label you as the best kid in the country?
Oh, because you used to have to take screenshots, with a camera. You used to have to take a photo of the TV and your score.
Oh, what? And then send it in?
And send it in.
Wow.
And because I was the best, I got invited to this special preview screening of Ghostbusters.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
In the West End with, and it was quite a small preview screening as well in Shaftesbury Avenue.
Wow.
And so I felt very privileged and thought it was an amazing movie. Just loved it.
Did you?
So I've got nice fond memories of the first time I saw it being at the cinema.
God, that's amazing.
And feeling very special.
It's so funny, actually. To bring up matters arising now, it feels kind of on point because, both my partner Josh and the people in my studio who I've listened to No Garnish with, they've all said wow, God, Paul, he's a bit of a dark horse, isn't it? Because you've kind of brought all of this stuff out. Josh was like, I didn't know he was in a band. I didn't know he was a compere. I didn't know, how many jobs have Paul done? He's had three massive career changes. He got married in Fiji.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you're actually quite a dark horse of all these kind of enigma things.
And I was the 12-year-old barnstorming champion of England.
I love it. That's amazing. What a thing to be the champion of as well.
I know, so obscure.
So that's really cool. So you were one of the first people in the UK to see this film. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I think it is a great movie just because I think it's something that you can, I've seen it so many times as an adult as well. Yeah. It's just something that you want to put on every now and again.
Yeah.
Because I think kind of a bit like the Pixar formula, really good adult humour in it that goes over the heads of kids because it's subtle enough, but the whole keymaster, the whole gatekeeper, the sort of sexual innuendo of that is just great, isn't it? And then but the special effects are stunning for the time. They're absolutely incredible.
They still look pretty good.
They do.
Most of them. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that the special effects of Slimer was made by the same special effects artist who worked on The Thing.
Oh, Rob Bottin.
Yeah, Rob Bottin.
I used to know all these people. You know, I was a real Fangoria kid when I was a teenager. So I used to know the names of all these effects artists and stuff.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, walls of my teenage bedroom were covered in Fangoria posters.
Oh, really? I've never seen Fangoria post. What was it, like a magazine?
Yeah, it was. Fangoria was a horror magazine, so they would have all like... you know, about horror films.
Well, I mean, Rob Bottin, you know, he's done loads of films, yeah. Like Total Recall. He was really kind of quite prolific, actually, wasn't he? And then mostly in makeup. So he's done like Game of Thrones, Fight Club, Fear and Loathing, Mission Impossible 7.
Right.
The first RoboCop, Witches of Eastwick. God, he's done so much.
Done loads, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because the whole 80s nostalgia thing has really come back in the last decade. But, of course, you lived through all of that the first time around.
I lived it, man.
Lived it.
Yeah.
Whereas I kind of vicariously lived it. I kind of lived through the 90s of it, but obviously I was a kid. So I got some of the 80s kind of residual stuff and a lot of the 90s stuff. But, of course, my years were really kind of late 90s, 2000s, where everything had gone a bit crap because there was that whole CGI crossover. Because we watched recently, actually the other night, Hellraiser. I'd never seen Hellraiser.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's just laughable now.
Is it? Does it look bad?
It looks really bad.
Right.
But, you know, quite amazing to have this kind of horror movie, you know, because Clive Barker, I didn't realise, was a Liverpudlian writer.
Yeah.
So it's all kind of set in the UK with some American actors. And it's all very strange, but I didn't realise he was into S&M, which is kind of what Hellraiser is all about.
I didn't realise that either.
Well, you can kind of pick up on it because, you know, they talk about how they give you the most thrilling pleasure and pain, you know.
Okay.
And it's all very S&M-y dungeon, sex dungeon stuff, isn't it? But that kind of like, I can see how that coined a whole generation of goths, you know, taking that kind of look.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it kind of almost looks like The Matrix.
Yeah,
kind of was very inspired by that as well.
Yeah,
in those like black leather suits and everything with lots of belts and straps and you know. Anyway, back to Ghostbusters.
Well, I didn't bring any Ghostbusters facts, but I've got lots of real life New York ghost stories.
Well, one Ghostbusters fact that
You to carry on with Ghostbusters.
Just as I've remembered it, is that Slimer was originally going to be John Belushi. So they were going to...
Hang on, you're going to have to explain it. I'm picturing his face on Slimer's body.
So Slimer is kind of based on John Belushi.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see it now.
So Slimer was based on John Belushi as a kind of in-joke because a lot of the people who worked on the crew had also worked with John Belushi.
Right.
So it was a kind of like... So it's only just been confirmed in recent years, really.
I love film trivia stuff.
Well, one of the facts that's quite interesting about Ghostbusters is that they're only given 10 months to design and build and shoot every special effects needed for the film. So what they did was that they... The animation supervisor, Terry Wendell, came up with a clever yet crazy idea that involved spray painting a peanut green and using that for Slimer in the long shots.
That's genius.
So actually, next time I look at it, I'm going to have a look at that and see if it looks like a green peanut.
Because it is.
Because essentially that's what it is, isn't it?
Excellent.
Sigourney Weaver, so she had a very, very interesting audition.
Right.
So it was a few years after her iconic portrayal of Ripley, and she'd been eagerly wanting to do a comedy.
Right.
So she decided to audition for the role of Venkman's love interest. As the story goes, rather than give a traditional audition, she opted to do a wordless scene that involved her transforming into one of Gozer's monstrous terror dogs.
Oh, wow.
And
Gozer Gurney.
In 2014, apparently, she revealed in a conversation with Vanity Fair that in her audition, she remembers starting to growl and bark and gnaw on the cushions and jump around.
Oh, do you not wish there was video of that?
Yeah, well, apparently Ivan cut the tape and said, don't ever do that again. Can you imagine Sigourney Weaver doing that?
I would so love to see that.
And it's amazing, actually. Just reading up on the... It grossed over $295 million worldwide.
Wow.
Making it the highest grossing comedy of all time.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Right.
And if you think also with Ghostbusters, it's kind of... It also went into, like, you know, games and there was the animated series as well.
Yeah,
I mean, it was big, big money, wasn't it?
Yeah. Good facts.
Good facts.
Yeah.
Is that enough facts?
I think so.
I think so, yeah. Because otherwise, we've got other things to get on with, haven't we?
Yeah.
Oh my God, Michael Keaton was originally cast as Peter Venkman. Can't see that at all.
Right.
Okay, I'm done. I promise.
You're done. Okay.
With the Ghostbusters.
I really enjoyed those, though. Thank you for bringing those. Why am I always laughing?
Because you've said thank you about eight times. Now.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, hey, wait. There's another thing I want to talk about. Oh, no. I really have to stop it there. That's it. I promise.
Okay, I'm actually going to stop the tape.
Ree, shut up! Is that to, like, get me to cut there so that we can...
I couldn't help it. It just popped in there.
What? What just popped in there?
I tried to think.
Look!
No! It can't be.
What is it?
It can't be.
What did you do, Ree?
Oh, shit!
It's the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
So, Paul.
Yes.
So, Paul.
Yeah.
Do you know about marshmallows?
Do you know, I was going to look stuff up, but I completely forgot to. I got hung up on other things.
Well, did you know that marshmallows were actually an ancient Egyptian treat? So,
really?
So amazingly, with marshmallows, I didn't know this, but right, marshmallows originate to about 2000 BC.
Wow.
And they were an ancient Egyptian treat that was specifically only for royalty because they were reserved for the gods, basically. They kind of thought of them as a treat for the gods. Okay. And its name arrives from the mallow plant. So what they would do is they would squeeze the sap from the mallow plant and they would mix it with nuts and honey.
Okay.
But no one really kind of knows what this candy looked like back then.
Okay. That's interesting.
It is kind of nuts, isn't it? Yeah. I didn't know it was that long. Anyway, fast forward now to the 1800s because the French first introduced it and it was so popular that they just couldn't keep up with the demand of it.
This is so weird. It's like you've become me and I've become you.
This is what it's like.
It's messing with my head a little bit.
This is what it's like. So they modified cornstarch to make it more stable. And then it became really popularized in the early 1900s in America because by doing that, they could mass produce it in a manufactured process.
And that's when you came up with the modern marshmallow.
Yeah.
Wow.
God, isn't that nuts? I had no idea that it was originated in 2000 BC.
That's crazy.
It is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Thank you for that fact.
I'm the fact factory tonight.
Yeah. So we've done some Ghostbusters facts.
Yeah.
I've got some real life New York ghost stories for you.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So some of these are bar ghosts.
Oh, I like it. And so instead of the barfly, they're bar ghosts.
Bar ghosts. And Dylan Thomas is a bar ghost. Do you know Dylan Thomas, the Welsh poet?
Yeah, I recognise the name.
Welsh poet and playwright. People claim that he drank 18 straight whiskies on his last night.
Well, that would kill anyone.
But after he died, Many people have seen his ghost at the White Horse Tavern, sitting at his favourite table, drinking whiskey, and sometimes even stealing whiskey from behind the bar.
Seriously? I love it. I love the sort of thing of like, it's not the bar staff or anyone stealing the whiskey. It's the bloody ghost.
It's the ghost of Dylan Thomas.
Yeah. On your tax return, like expendable losses, like the ghost, the ghost of our tavern. Can you imagine if ghosts were like real like that? And actually you would have a taxable expense as a business in case you had a ghost in your tavern. That's a film there in itself, isn't it?
There is. I've got another bar ghost.
Right. I like these cocktail ghosts.
Yeah, there's a cocktail bar called the Campbell.
Right.
It used to be called the Campbell Apartment, and it's in Grand Central Station. In 2010, owner Mark Grosick said, "Over the last several years, employees have had instances where they felt someone pushing them from behind when they were walking across the floor. They felt gusts of cold air coming out of nowhere. My staff has even reported seeing apparitions of an old, fashionably dressed couple sitting and having a cocktail on the balcony when the place was completely closed."
Wow, okay.
He added that the ghostly goings-on are so frequent that many of his staff members refuse to be in the place on their own.
Right, right.
But there's no kind of history there that, as far as we know, no one died there specifically.
I guess there's lots of people who've died at Grand Central Station, though.
Yeah, I've got another... There isn't, actually. My number three story is another Grand Central ghost.
Right, okay.
So one night, the station clerk's on duty. It's coming up to midnight, and a grey-haired man and a black cat approaches him.
Right.
And says,
"The midnight train from hell is coming for me! I have committed too many crimes against man and sins against heaven!"
And he replies, "I'm afraid, sir, there's only the 11:58 from Croydon on the Hudson and the 12:02 from Newhaven." And just as he says that, a steam whistle blows and a steam locomotive chugs along the tracks, and he says he felt the rush of hot air from the engine and the grey-haired man vanished, leaving only his black hat on the floor of the terminal. I love that, though. The midnight train to hell.
I love that. So that's amazing. That's fucking awesome. And I love it how, like, he just responded with just, like, "No, you're not, like, there's only two trains coming, mate." The midnight train to hell isn't not until next week.
He does keep his cool, doesn't he?
I love that. Because that's really interesting, actually, because in Ghostbusters 2, there's a great moment where they're in the underground, going through the sewers, and then a ghost train goes through them.
You might like this one, the Gay Street Phantom.
Ah, the Gay Street Phantom. That sounds like what I'll be when I die.
So Gay Street is a stable. It's like an old stable alley in Greenwich Village. There's not ghosts in Greenwich Village, it seems.
Right.
And it's another bar one, because the basement of number 12 Gay Street was a famous speakeasy called the Pirate's Den.
Okay.
Sounds of raucous parties have been heard from within, and several ghosts have been seen appearing and vanishing. I mean, this is like multiple ghosts.
Right.
This is like a proper ghost house.
What, full multiple spectral apparitions?
Indeed.
Wow.
Regular apparitions include a foreign diplomat nervously pacing, a pretty young woman dressed in 1930s outfit, and a girl from the 1960s in front of the door. But the best known spirit is the Gay Street Phantom, an old man decked out in an opera cape and top hat.
Oh, wow.
And the last one, and I thought this is a really interesting one. This is a really sad one. I think the other ones are kind of a bit humorous.
Yeah.
This one's sad.
You need a good sad ghost story, though.
Yeah. So the Empire State Building, lots of suicide attempts.
Right, of course.
And the most famous is that of 23-year-old Evelyn McHale, who threw herself from the 86th floor observation deck in 1947.
Can you imagine doing that?
She was very well dressed as well. She was wearing pearls and white gloves. She neatly folded her coat and placed it over the rail.
Right.
Climbed up, jumped over.
God.
And she landed on a limousine.
Wow.
And there was a photographer from Life magazine who took a photo of her.
Oh, I think I've seen this photo.
Andy Warhol made an image based on it.
Right.
And it was being called the most beautiful suicide.
Right.
Because the way she looks like she's just landing. There's no blood.
Right.
Obviously visible. And her legs are kind of quite neatly crossed.
Right.
Her head is back. The image of her is kind of upside down.
Yeah.
So the head is at the bottom.
Yeah.
And the legs are at the top.
And she kind of crushes into the limousine, doesn't she?
Yeah. And so you've had that twisted metal around her. Yeah. It is a really striking image. Yeah, like I said, Warhol's used that image. David Bowie did, in his video for his single Jump, they say.
Right.
He's lying on top of a limousine.
Right. That. Yeah.
And also Radiohead, Tom York does it in the video for Street Spirit. So it's been used in popular imagery.
God, that's crazy, isn't it? It's funny, isn't it? Because it really made me think of the film Untouchables, because there's a couple of really famous scenes in that film. I know it's not very much like a well sort of revered film, but actually I think it's a great film. And there's two scenes in it. The one scene at the end where he throws the guy who's dressed all in white, who's the hitman for the mob.
Oh, yeah.
Who kills his friend, who's played by Sean Connery.
Yeah.
He throws him off a building and he lands into a car
right. And
crushes it like that. And there's another scene in Grand Central Station, which is very famous, which also recreates a scene from, I think, Battleship Potemkin, which is like a 1920s silent movie, I think, where the pushchair is Graham going down the stairs.
Right, yeah.
You know, so it's quite interesting, sort of these famous scenes being recreated in movies. You know, that scene particularly, you know, how you've said it's like been recreated many times in pop culture. Do you know why she died? Why she killed herself? Was that ever discovered?
It seems like depression. She was due to be married, and in the note she makes reference to what a terrible wife she would be. In the note, she makes great pains to say that she doesn't want to be remembered.
Really?
She doesn't want people at a funeral. She doesn't want people to mourn.
Right.
Kind of ironically, that of all the suicides that New York's had, the one who specifically says "Don't remember me" has become iconic.
Isn't that like a pathos in life? Isn't it often the thing that you most want often doesn't really actually happen?
Yeah.
It's the thing that you least want that tends to happen in life. There's a weird like twisted pathos in that, isn't there?
I'm gonna throw one more.
Okay.
To bring it back up a little bit.
Yeah, okay. We've gotten quite, Debbie Downer.
Because this is kind of quite a nice one.
I mean, ghosts, bringing it up, it's difficult ghosts, isn't it?
Yeah.
You never really hear about nice ghosts, do you?
But I'm going to tell you about a nice ghost.
A nice ghost?
Yeah. What? Yeah. It's a sad story again, but the ghost is a nice one.
Okay.
And it's Roy from Rolling Hills Asylum. The sad part, at the young age of 12, a boy with gigantism was dropped off at the poorhouse by his father. The father was a successful banker, and he was just ashamed of his son's appearance.
What, gigantism? What's that?
It's a condition where there's excessive growth. Remember, like, the tallest guy in the world used to be, like, 8 feet tall?
Yeah.
He had gigantism.
Oh, okay.
So it just causes people to be extra tall.
Right,
I mean,
right.
That's really all it is.
God, and his father was so upset.
Yeah,
he
thought it was
an
embarrassment to the family.
Oh, Jesus, God. It's just harsh times, weren't
they? Roy lived out his whole life at this asylum until he died in the 1940s.
Jesus Christ.
Grew to be over 7 feet tall, and he was like huge. He was a huge guy, and many people claim to have seen the ghost of Roy. But and actually he's become a bit of an icon because he's a nice ghost. People get a nice feeling.
Right.
He's not someone who spooks people.
He's like a gentle giant.
Gentle giant. And people now sometimes gather at the asylum to celebrate his birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
So he
also kind of reminds me of the Marshmallow Man.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Mr. Stay Puft.
Mr. Stay Puft.
Who tried to destroy all of New York, but, you know.
Gentle Giant.
Gentle Giant, yeah.
Those are my favourite New York ghost stories.
God, that's really interesting, though. Yeah, thank you for sharing those. Why do you think we have such a fascination with ghosts?
I was going to ask you that. I'm still pondering that question.
Are you?
What do you think?
What do I think? I think it's a fundamental branch of the existential question of what is the meaning of life. But I think it goes deeper down to our fear of living a life of regret. I think it's more than just dying and more than just wanting our soul to live on. It's more about the fear of getting to the end of our life and having a life of regret, of thinking that we could have been more than we are. Because the thing is, most ghosts, the premise of a ghost is being trapped between worlds and being held back. And I think, you know, it kind of goes down into a more deep-rooted thing about maybe when we were nomadic people, or maybe when we lived in tribes, and that we didn't want to get left behind. Because if you were the one to be left behind in a nomadic tribe, you'd be by yourself. It's about the kind of existential idea of being by yourself, being left alone.
So are you saying it's almost like it's a trace, not memory is the wrong word, but something connected to our primitive selves?
Yeah, like a sort of a residual memory.
A residual
that's
memory.
That's kind of passed down through... Because I do believe that, you know, our genetic memory is passed down. And I think, you know, it's that kind of thing of when you're a child and you get separated from your mom in a supermarket. That kind of fear... is a sort of residual fear that we have as human beings, and we don't want to get left alone and trapped between worlds. I think that's something more terrifying than hell, is being trapped on this earth alone to wander forever in a partial existence for eternity.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? And I think what scares us the most is what we're most intrigued about.
That really makes me think of the novel Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders.
Oh, okay.
Which is about ghosts.
Right.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that it's all about the world of ghosts.
Right.
In the graveyard where Lincoln's son has been buried.
Right.
And it really goes into why they're trapped there, why the different ghosts are there and the different reasons.
Oh, okay.
But it really captures that, the horror of that idea.
Right, interesting.
But that was just lighting aside. I like that theory a lot that you just said. I'm almost hesitant to phrase it as, do you believe in ghosts?
Do I believe in ghosts? I don't know. I definitely like the idea of believing in the paranormal. Yeah, I like the idea of believing in it, whether people have actually seen ghosts or not. I think the mind is an incredible vehicle for creating things out of nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have been in scary situations. I've been, you know, I walked through the wood opposite my house, Malcolm Wood, which has a really ancient graveyard. Mm. And I challenged myself when I was a teenager to walk through it by myself at night, through the graveyard, through the wood. And, oh my God, I've never been so scared in my life. And I've seen some freaky stuff in there, like almost like Blair Witch type things of like wicker models of like people hung up in trees and stuff. But, you know, and then growing up there, hearing the foxes howl at night and not knowing that what that was as a kid. And do you know what I mean? So when I went through there, you know, my mind was racing with fear.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when we're in situations, when we're in a creepy cellar, or if, you know, if people just say that, you know, the place is haunted and you're by yourself, you can feel all sorts of shivers down your spine or someone touching you.
Yeah.
You know, so whether these are real or not is another question. I think people can definitely experience ghosts, but whether that a real experience or not is a different thing. You know, their mind has an incredible ability to create something out of nothing.
Well, certainly as an adult, I've never experienced anything supernatural. I've spoken to enough people who have recounted something that they can't explain that's supernatural, and I 100% believe them.
Right, okay.
And I don't have any explanation, and I wouldn't say I'm someone who believes in ghosts, but I certainly believe that people experience what they consider as ghosts, whatever that is. Does that make sense?
It's kind of
what you're saying, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah.
Have you ever experienced something supernatural that you would definitely say is okay, I can't explain? You have?
Yeah, I have. Okay. And it was when I was really young. And actually, funny enough, it was around the time that Ghost Watch came out. And I don't know if you ever remember
Ghost Watch. Ghost Watch, yeah.
But for listeners, if you remember it or if you don't, in Britain, the BBC did a spoof documentary called Ghost Watch, which came out in 1992. Mm. So I was born in 84, so I would have been eight.
You watched it at 8 years old.
I watched it at 8 years old, and it absolutely terrified me.
Yeah.
And actually, there were loads of reports by Ofcom at the time of people saying it was just way too real and way too scary.
Yeah.
And I think also at the time, spoof documentaries and stuff weren't really a thing.
No.
So it was quite ahead of its curve, really. It was kind of before Blair Witch.
Mm.
So I was totally freaked out. And I used to be really scared of ghosts when I was a kid. I had a very overactive imagination.
I did as well, yeah.
I think if you do as a kid, you know, these things affect you more. I remember I was convinced that I saw in the corner of my eye a man dressed in tennis gear. right. walking across the landing of my house.
Okay.
And I was kind of like, oh, is my... I said to my mom, it's like, oh, is my brother upstairs?
Yeah.
My mom was like, no, he's not in, he's out. I was like, oh, I've just saw him walk into the bedroom. And I walked back up and looked into his room and there was no one there. But I was convinced in the corner of my eye that I'd watched someone in tennis gear walk into his room. I mean, I had a terrifying experience when I was a teenager at my parents' house. The first time I was ever allowed to stay home alone when they went on holiday, and I got really baked in my bedroom. Right. And I grew up in, yeah, quite a remote place. As I said, there was a wood that was next door to me. The nearest house was about an acre away. It was the first time I felt really kind of alone, actually, in this house. It was quite a large house by myself. And being stoned wasn't a very conducive thing to feeling that ease. And I looked down at the bottom of the garden, and all of a sudden, I just saw the bushes go... And then I heard this, and just the bushes moving, and I was just like smoking this joint, going, "What the fuck is that?" And I got my torch and shined it down the bottom of the garden, and then all there was just these like two sets of like eyes just glowing back at me in the reflection. So clearly it was like a fox and a cat fighting, and then the two foxes that were probably fighting over the cat were just staring at me. But fuck me, was I terrified.
I do love these stories. I was reading yesterday, as I remember, I think it's a place called Woolerton Park.
Right.
Loads of people, like multiple people across many, many years have seen gnomes there.
Gnomes.
and it's so weird that it's so consistent, this story of like little people
right
who just appear out of the bushes and then someone spotted us and disappear again.
No way.
Like the gnomes, look up the gnomes of Woolerton Park and all these different stories across this last century.
Oh, I love it.
So bizarre.
That's really cool.
And one of the more modern ones. It was on YouTube, actually, I first encountered this. And there was a group of kids who decided to go exploring in Woolerton, a part of it.
Yeah.
And they recounted this story of being chased by these gnomes.
Yeah.
But the gnomes all had, in their story, the gnomes all had little cars.
Right.
And so, like, in the, you know, the YouTube comments, it was like, well, where do the gnomes get little cars from?
Ha!
What, there's like a little gnome car dealership somewhere. There's a whole industry that needs to make little gnome cars.
Where's
that hidden?
Yeah. Like, what type of cars were they? Were they based on like old cars? Were they like modern cars? Like gnomes riding around in miniature SUVs.
Apparently they were bubble cars.
They were bubble cars.
But I think that fit the time. I think it was maybe 60s when bubble cars were around. And there were loads of them. Like, they were counted like 30 of these gnomes and bubble cars chased them out of the park. Which on its own would have been, okay, that's ridiculous. Actually, there's quite a few stories going back 100 years of people seeing little people in Woolerton Park.
Oh, my God. And what's Woolerton Park like? Is it like a...
No idea.
God, how weird.
Anyway, that's a fun little story to end on, isn't it?
Oh, I love it.
Of, from giant marshmallow men to little gnomes.
Oh my God. Well, thank you so much for the amazing cocktail. I've really enjoyed it tonight.
Excellent, me too.
And it's been nice to sit in the fact chair for a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm definitely willing to relinquish the chair back to you. okay. There's a lot of pressure to be the fact factory. But I've enjoyed it for just to have the tables turned momentarily.
It's been fun, isn't it? Flipped it around a bit.
And great ghost stories, man. I love them.
Right. Should we do the dice?
I think we should do the dice.
Yeah.
Ooh, 5 and 4, number 9.
Okay, number 9 is the Benton's Old Fashioned.
Oh, what's that?
It's an old fashioned made with bacon-infused bourbon.
Bacon-infused bourbon?
Yeah, it's a PDT cocktail.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah. Oh, that
you
sounds...
like the sound of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I've never had one.
You've never had one?
No, I've never had one.
Oh, so this will be a new experience for both of us.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's make the Benton's Old Fashioned and drink the Benton's Old Fashioned.
Yeah, I like it. We can bring home the bacon.
Yeah.
Ah!
Okay, excellent. That's the next episode sorted.
Cool. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And as always, yep. We really appreciate your love and support.
Indeed we do.
We checked as well. And for everyone that has rated us on Spotify.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Giving us like 5 stars. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And so we're really appreciative of that. And if you haven't done that yet, if you could give us a review, that really helps.
Yeah, if you hadn't done that yet, what the fuck are you doing? Get on with it.
And also...
No, I'm kidding.
And yeah.
I'm so grateful anyone has done it.
We'll send the boys around.
Send the ghost
around. Send the ghost around. And and if you can follow our Instagram page, which is No Garnish Pod, that's great. It's always great to have new followers. And as always, send us any messages through Instagram or our email. Which is nogarnish@fastmail.fm. And that's it, really. So thank you so much for your support.
Thank you. And cheers.
Cheers. Thank you so much. Seen the new Ghostbusters Afterlife?
I was going to ask you that. I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Okay. I was really pleasantly surprised. The kid acting was great.
Okay.
They weren't obnoxious. And okay, it didn't like, it's not massively memorable, but I remember it being enjoyable, and okay. I remember it blowing my expectations, and I was like, oh, actually, that was quite a good film.
I'm not a fan of, is it Paul Rudd in that?
Yeah, Paul Rudd's in it. You see, you know, he's a bit of the gay man's like ultimate boyfriend, Paul Rudd.
Really?
Yeah, I've had a long term massive crush on him. I really enjoy him. Okay. I think he's a great comedic actor. The only thing that really freaks me out about him is that I think he's been bathing in the blood of virgins because the man hasn't aged. He looks the same. When you look at a photo of him from when he was a teenager to now, it doesn't look like he's changed much. And I find that a bit creepy. Why don't you like Paul Rudd?
Talking the last episode about Tom Hanks being vanilla.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd is vanilla's vanilla.
I just think he's a great boyfriend material. I just think he'll love you and care for you. And I guess he's a really nice guy, and he's quite good looking, and he's quite cheapy chirpy.
Yeah.
I think he's a tasty dish.
Okay.
I think he would...
for a man to care for me and love me, then okay. I'd reconsider Paul Rudd.
I think he's a guy that would give you a really good night out, make you laugh, you'd have pretty good sex with him. I don't know if it'd be amazing, but then you'd have really good breakfast in the next morning. I think he would make you very, very good breakfast. I think the sex would be okay, but the breakfast would be great.